You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good morning, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia broadcasting live from South Florida. I want to thank you for joining us on the American Hour this morning. Of course, we know that the vast majority of you are going to download the show because we get just tens of thousands of downloads, and that's cool because it's so easy these days to listen to a show on your smartphone, in your car, in the house, off your iPad, and I travel a lot, so I know how that goes. But for those of you that are listening live, we appreciate it. Our call-in number is 310-982-4145. And we've got a very special guest today. I'm going to go over some news and stuff, a couple of administrative things here first, bring our guest right on, and then we'll discuss some of the latest news items. The focus today really is going to be on terrorism in the U.S. Of course, that's on everybody's minds these days, obviously. But I want to remind everybody that Michael Cutler is going to be on Friday night, this Friday night, on his show on this network. And he's the guy to be listening to when it comes to this terrorism stuff from the perspective of how are they getting in. Now, I'm going to tell you where you can go find his testimony. Just back in March, he testified before the Senate as they were discussing, guess what, immigration. And what was one of the things that Michael focused on when it came to the proposed Senate immigration bill? It was terrorism, because this immigration bill they're proposing makes it extremely easy for terrorists to get in and blend in with our society. It's already been a problem, and this makes it even easier. And his testimony, if you want to go look on a government site, you know, one of the easiest things to do is Google it. But if you want to go to the actual site that I pulled it up, it's judiciary.senate.gov. And it doesn't end there. Just do it. Just do a Michael Cutler Senate testimony immigration. Just plug that into Google. Boom. It'll take you there and some other places. And this is a PDF that I looked at. And I did see it yesterday on somebody's website. It was a pretty prominent website. It might have been somebody like American Spectator, and I can't remember. And I thought I bookmarked it, but I didn't. So it's well worth reading. So this was before the Boston bombing. He was ringing the warning bells about terrorism and how our immigration policies have allowed people, and now we see, and we're going to talk about that today. How did these guys get in this country? How did they stay? How did they radicalize, which we know they did, and nobody paid any attention to them. And this was Michael's point, that it's already been going on and a problem, and the new immigration bill just makes it worse. So don't miss Cutler's show tonight. I'm sorry, Friday night, 7 p.m. We're going to be back on the air again because this is important stuff. Broadcasting again tomorrow, 11 a.m., still covering this subject as well as what current events are in the news, because there are a lot of current events. Well, let me bring on our special guest for the day, and we're talking about somebody from Freedom Fighters of America, the founder, Lynn Cherimay III. He is a former Marine. He certainly is a patriot, and his website is all about trying to get out the truth about what's really going on, that not only will the mainstream media not tell you, but kind of things our government is doing to us. And I like this guy, and I like this website, because that's what we do on this show. We do a variety of things, but I've been telling people for years, you have no idea about what government is really doing to you. You've really got to dig in and pay attention to find out, because the media isn't telling us, and the government is screwing us in so many ways, it is unbelievable. So with no further ado, Lynn, how are you doing today?
Good, sir. Good, sir. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Now, start right off by telling folks where they can go to find your website, any social media, any way to contact you, et cetera, anything that you want to put out, and then tell us a little bit about your background and the purpose of Freedom Fighters of America.
Well, you can contact us through the website, freedomfightersofamerica.blogspot.com, or we also have a Twitter account, at Freedom FOA, that's Freedom Fighters of America, Freedom FOA. You know, tweet us, provide suggestions for the site. And like you were saying earlier, it's your site. We're trying to gear our message to what's affecting you in the country today. We're not all this showbiz and you know, pictures of this and videos of this. We're trying to bring you the messages, the information that you need to make informed decisions. We're not trying to go over your head. We're trying to bring it to you in layman's terms. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect. Now, tell us about your background as an individual.
Well, like you said, I started out in the Marine Corps when I was 17. I stayed in the Marines for 6 years. Lived in various states. I guess I have a unique perspective on the United States. I've lived in 12 different states, from California to North Carolina, from deep south Louisiana to Wyoming. I lived in Casper, Wyoming for 6 years. I've got friends all over the country. It gives me a very good perspective of how, you know, maybe people feel differently about certain subjects throughout the country. And I think the sentiment's all the same. I've been in healthcare now for, not clinical, but on the financial side of it. So kind of pretty in tune on what the new healthcare law is going to do to hospitals, especially small rural hospitals. It's going to have a dramatic effect on them. Because if you don't have the cash, you don't have the cash, you won't have it then. But like I said, I've been doing this for almost 30 years. I enjoy very much what I do because, you know, in a way, everybody within a facility, a healthcare organization, is actually helping people. You know, people, hospitals sometimes get a bad rap for turning patients away. We don't try to do that here. We're trying to get people help. So, you know, just like I said, visit the site. You'll see what the message is about.
All right, so that's freedomfightersofamerica.blogspot.com. Absolutely. And, well, I have a question of the day that I'm going to throw out there. And, of course, I'm going to give you first shot at answering it if you want to, Lynn, or you want to think about it. But it's a pretty simple, straightforward question. We see the effects of the sequester. Oh, my goodness. And as an airline pilot, I haven't been affected yet by these so-called delays, et cetera, but I have seen less immigration officials when I come back into the country manning the kiosks for folks coming through immigration into the country. And so the lineups have been much bigger. And that's because, you know, each day of the week they're letting a couple people go, they're furloughing, you know, without pay and that kind of stuff. So here's the question of the day. How is it that the federal government has more money this year than last year, but it has to make cutbacks? Now, let me qualify that. People saying, well, Tom, no, the sequester. First of all, every time you hear a libtard say $85 billion were cut from the budget, that's from this year and next year. So it's really only about 40-something. We'll call it $44 billion. So it's not as much as they're claiming. Okay, so they're not cutting back for next year in anticipation this year. They're the government. They wait till the last minute. So there will be cutbacks next year, too. And then they'll claim it's $85 billion next year when it's 85 over 2 years. Okay, so $44 billion. But that just came out of the extra money they wanted. So here's what happened. I'm just going to throw some random numbers out there just to give you an idea, just to make the point. Let's say that last year the federal government had trillion dollars to spend. They asked for this year to have $4 trillion to spend, but the cutbacks left them with $3.8 trillion. So how is it that they have more money than last year, but they're making cutbacks? That's the question of the day. How is it? Only in government can you have more money this year than last year, and you have to cut back on things that you were able to pay for last year, but you have more money this year? That's the question. If anybody can answer that, Lynn, you want to take a shot at it?
Well, and this is some of the information we've been putting out on the website also. You know, how is it that we send $123 million to some guys over in Syria, and we're worried about $85 billion? You know, that's a drop in the bucket. And everything you said is true. I mean, the cuts were on the increase. The cuts were not on what was already existing. You know, but if you're not getting that message, and you're not even getting that message from the mainstream media. You're not getting that message. All it is about death and horror and lines backed up at the turnstiles at the airport. You know, everybody's having to wait. This is invented. This is put in place by your government. Is doing this to make you think something that's not really true. The media is complicit in all this. They know. You know, we're all afraid to say that this is our theory, because the other side will tell you and try to shout you down. You know, if it becomes an issue of a birth certificate for President Obama, you're a birther. Oh, well, that hurt my feelings really bad. So I'm not going to say anything else. We have been shouted down for too long. I'm not one to get upset at those kind of things. You can shout me down all day long, but I'm still going to stand there, and I'm still going to stand my ground. And like I said, the $123 million that we sent to terrorists, that's where it's going to wind up.
Right.
You know, you look at a few different things. Benghazi, four people are dead. Fast and the Furious. How many people died because of that? There were rumors in Benghazi of arms shipments. We know that happened in Fast and the Furious. So, who are we giving weapons to that we don't want anyone to know about? You know, those people died in Benghazi not because they had to. They knew everything that was happening. So you know, the internet, the news, newspapers, people, I mean, there's so much connectivity today. They can't cover up these lies. So they get people to sway the opinion. So, but back to the $123 million and the $85 billion. That's a drop in the bucket. Obama said he was gonna cut the deficit in half. By the end of his first term, $4.5 trillion less, because it was $9 trillion. So that didn't happen, and right now we're on our way to $17 trillion, and by the end of his second term, we'll be pretty close to $23 trillion. Did he forget what he promised? No, he didn't, because it was a lie. It was a lie to get him elected. You know, we can talk about this all day, Tom. I you know, I've got I just got tired, and that's why the website was you know, founded. I'm tired of sitting back being afraid to say anything. Americans should not be afraid. There's no Black America. There's no Mexican America. There is no Asian America. We're all Americans. And when you come here, you're expected to assimilate to being an American. So they allow people to enter this country
that they know may be unsavory. But then they try to cover that up later when something happens. You can't tell me. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of covering up going on here, a lot of covering up. And we're going to get to that in a few minutes here when it comes to the Boston bombing. But we'll throw this out there one more time. How is it that the federal government has more money than it had last year, but it's having to make cutbacks? The only possible answer I can come up with, well, we know what the answer is. It's meant to hurt the American people and piss them off so that Obama can get what he wants. The sequester was his idea. Republicans went along with it. He thought that he could manipulate them once this happened, but the Republicans stood their ground and said, no, it was your idea. You wanted it. There you go. It's all yours. You own it. So it's just a big political game. But if there was a logical explanation, if there was, it would mean that when Congress and the Senate and the President came to an agreement, well, of course, there was no budget. We know that. But came to an agreement on how much money we could spend this year by increasing the debt limit. And they obviously added additional income over last year. So what we're saying essentially is whatever additional programs and funding was planned for this year, we're not scaling those back. We're going to scale back existing programs that hurt Americans. That's the bottom line. Whatever it was that was supposed to be get additional funding, it could have been double the food stamps. It could have been, you know, more welfare. It could have been solar panels on people's homes. Whatever it was that was appropriated for with additional money, those aren't being cut. Programs that had the money and still had the same amount of money because they said, well, it's a 10% across the board cut. It didn't tell you what you actually had to cut within each department. It just said 10% across the board. So they're selectively choosing the things that make Americans hurt. That's the bottom line. But now, when it comes to pain and hurting and the government screwing us, let's see what's going on in Washington State. If you go to myway.com, you'll find this article. And I have another question for everybody. How are you and I going to end up paying more for Obamacare than he told us? Well, let's examine a way. Virginia, for example, is requiring all part-time employees to work fewer than 30 hours. That's how they're going to save on not paying the penalty for not providing health care to government workers. So it's not just mom-and-pop, you know, organizations with or anybody with over 50 employees. Or, I don't know if you knew this, Lynn, but if you had three different businesses and each business had 20 employees and you thought, oh, hey, I don't have more than 50 employees in each one of those, and you somehow had enough to get you over the 50 mark with all of your companies, then you get penalized. So Virginia is going to make all of its part-time government employees work less than 30 hours. So see the impact of Obamacare to begin with. When Obama said, if you're working part-time, you're going to get coverage. And we're redefining part-time all the way down to 30 hours. What did he really do to people? He screwed them. He screwed them by now making people in the entire state of Virginia that may work for the government part-time, they're going to work 29 hours less. So they're going to earn less money. He just took money out of their pockets. But how about in Florida, where I live? Well, we're facing a potential $300 million penalty for not covering workers who have between 30 and 39 hours a week. So guess what? The state has decided, all right, we're going to cover them. Rather than pay the penalty. Now, I can tell you right now, covering them is more expensive than the penalty. But Florida thinks it's doing the right thing, and it's going to cover them. So what's that mean to me as a Florida resident? My taxes are going up. Probably my property taxes. There's probably going to be an increase in sales tax or some other such thing. So I'm going to be asked to help cover these part-time government employees in Florida. But guess what, Lynn? You and I are also going to be asked to cover part-time employees in the state of Washington, not the people of Washington, but you and me, because here's what's going on. In Washington, under their latest budget proposal, which was advanced in a way to help deal with a $1.2 billion shortfall, they're going to make policy changes with their part-time government employees that currently work between 20 and 30 hours. They're going to bump up their compensation, their pay a little bit, but they're going to drop their state health coverage. Well, that doesn't sound very nice. Oh, no, but see, they'll now be qualified to go into the federal health exchange program. So they'll get coverage it just won't be paid for by the state of Washington. And who's going to pay for that? Everybody in the country. So not only am I being asked to cover part-time employees in Florida with additional health care coverage, but I'm now being asked to cover people in the state of Washington. And there are going to be other states that can't make their budgets add up. They're going to push part-time government employees into the federal health exchanges, increasing the cost of Obamacare beyond, well beyond what he promised it would be. And to all those people that end up having to go into the federal health exchange that are forced, are going to be forced by their own governments and their employers. Now just picture this, what Washington State is doing, and now apply that to all kinds of businesses across the U.S. It's going to be cheaper to pay a penalty and push people into a government exchange than it is to actually cover them with health care. So they're not going to get the health care they either had or want. They're going to be forced in the federal exchange. And the president said that wasn't going to happen. So that was an outright lie. And I don't know if you guys have talked about this on your website at all, but I'm sure you have, Lynn, that Obamacare is going to cost us a heck of a lot more than the president told us, and all the promises he made about what you're going to get to keep and what you're going to get to do are not going to come true.
Well, and it doesn't change the cycle. You know, when they look at health care, they look at covering people. They don't look at the cycle and how it could hurt the cycle. You know, a wheel. If you pull one cog out of a wheel, it doesn't work right. They don't look at step back and look at the entire system. You know, when we have patients come to our ER that have Medicaid now, and they are routine patients, Medicaid pays us as a routine patient. It's $55.84. So they could use up $1,000 worth of resources. So what happens when all these exchanges take place and we have 50 million more in small rural hospitals to deal with? It's not because of the reimbursement you're not getting. It's because of the expenses you have to outlay to take care of those patients. So, see, no one asked somebody who really probably works in a hospital. You know, you've got people from healthcare organizations that are involved in this, but you know, they're only out for it for their gain. It's greed on all parts right now. You know, Tom, you mentioned, the Washington State. I talked to a representative of a very large corporation in the South that said they were told to cut all employees to under 30 hours. You've got people at certain locations of this company that are scrambling to hire more part-time workers to cover the hours. So,
yeah.
You know, it's happening. And it's exactly what he said it wasn't.
Yep. Well, along that line, I can tell you what else is going to happen to bump up the prices, and they're talking about this in Florida. Most people don't know this. Every county in the nation uses your property taxes to pay for some form of a health care system similar to Medicaid. So people that aren't qualified for Medicaid, if they are a resident in, you just name it, any county across the country in every state, and they all have their different rules, et cetera, but if you are poor and can't afford health care, there's a program for you. Now, a good friend of ours that we talk about frequently, Dr. James DeJerome, and the book that he came out with several years ago, The Cure for the American Healthcare Malady, in that book, and he told me personally as well, that in Palm Beach County, where I currently reside, in Palm Beach County, the property taxes pay for a county healthcare program that could cover 200,000 people in need. Do you know how many people actually participate in that program? 3,000. So we have all these programs that are being paid for. Now, think about the state legislature saying, we got all this money coming in from property taxes that could cover that many people across the state in county after county after county. Why don't we tap into that and drop those programs so that the poor people that could have qualified are going to have to go either on Medicaid or a government health exchange, federal health exchange, which haven't even been put together yet, and we'll use that property tax money for other stuff. They're already talking about it in Florida and other states as well. So there you go. The states that have been, to some small degree, covering some of these health care costs are going to start dropping those programs and shoving those people, the poorest people that will be taken up into the federal health exchanges without them having to pay a dime. And who's going to pay for it? We're going to pay for it. So that's just another way that the costs are going to go up. This is a huge, huge mess, this Obamacare, that is destroying existing programs and causing the states and counties across this nation to shift their game plan and shift the burden on the federal taxpayer. That's exactly what's going on right now. That's just one of a thousand different things that are going to screw us as taxpayers. But so if you want to take a look at that article, it's a very good article. It's in myway.com. Now let's move on to the Washington Times. This is a segment that I like to refer to as the godless left, because they are godless. We know, you saw, Lynn, the Democrat National Committee convention, I can't remember what month that was, but when it was very clear that the majority of people there voted to take God out of their platform. It was very clear. The leadership overrode that because it wasn't wouldn't go over good, but it was very clear that the vote, the no votes or the yay votes to take it out overwhelmingly won. And so that's why I now refer to them as the godless left. They are godless, and we're going to take a look at why they're godless. In the Washington Times today, amid new concerns about brutality of illegal forms of abortions, President Obama plans to deliver the keynote address at Planned Parenthood, Federation of America's annual fundraising dinner Thursday. The theme of dinner, now remember, President Obama says, well, Planned Parenthood does lots of good things, like they do mammograms. Not true. He said that numerous times, and it's an outright lie. Planned Parenthood does no mammograms whatsoever. They never have, and they don't now. But here's the theme of the dinner, if you can get this, at Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion mill in the country. The theme is time for care. Time for care. Wow, it sounds so caring and wonderful. And Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards said, Mr. Obama has done more than any president in history for women's health and rights. I can't name one thing he's done for women's health and rights. Oh, well, I can think of one thing. It's not that he's helped progress women's health and rights. What he's gotten with Obamacare is for you and me to pay for women's health and rights, women that can afford their health rights. For example, contraception. Anybody look to see what a box of 12 condoms at Walmart costs these days? $3.50? And I watch people with food stamps. I watch people with food stamps stand in the grocery line or at Walmart buying stuff that is excessive. But no, I've got to buy their condoms and their abortion pills and their pregnancy pills for them, because it's only the right thing to do. See, every time the president talks about women's rights, he makes it sound like he's advancing their rights when he's not advancing their rights at all. He hasn't made one single change to the rights of women and women's health care. All he's done has shifted the cost to us for things that some of us disagree with. For example, if you're a Catholic, you wouldn't be buying condoms for anybody. You don't want to have to be paying condoms for anybody if you're a good Catholic, especially an abortion pill. So I just want to let people know what a sham this whole thing is. And when this woman talked about the president has done more for women's health rights, in announcing Mr. Obama as a speaker, Planned Parenthood focused their praise on his work helping women gain greater access to contraception. In other words, getting other people to pay for it. I don't know if you knew this, Lynn, but in 1965, the Supreme Court ruled in Griswold versus Connecticut that the government cannot prohibit the use of contraception. In other words, nobody in the United States of America can stop you or anybody else from buying contraceptives. That was established in 1965. So when Planned Parenthood says that they praise the president for helping women gain greater access to contraception, they had all the access they could ever possibly have. I mean, the only way to change it would be to amend the Constitution. That's not going to happen. So really, it's a sham to get us to pay for things that many of us are opposed to undercut our religious beliefs and force us to pay for something that we ourselves would never engage in. So that is what I call our segment on the godless left. But just to cap it off, so we've got that sham going on, and then the abortion murdering doctor in Philadelphia who was killing live babies, his attorney said yesterday that it's ludicrous to say a baby is born alive just because it moves. Can you believe that, Lynn? The baby's moving, but it's ludicrous to believe that it's alive.
It all depends on who you're asking. Yeah.
That's why I call them the godless left. They are godless and lawless, and as long as you're a lefty, you can literally get away with murder because it's all about a woman's rights. It's all about her body, even if it's not in her body anymore. It's all about her. It's all about them. It's not about the choice they make that got them there.
This Goshnell, common sense would tell you if he's doing that in one location, this is happening a lot of other places.
Oh, it's happening all over the place. Absolutely. But there's no government oversight on that.
It just wasn't his idea. I mean, this guy is not smart enough to come up with the idea that, I'm just going to kill live babies because I'd like to do that. You know, there are other people out there doing that at the request of people that, you know, abortion is legal. You know, where's your morals? Where's your morality? What happened to us as a society that we think this is okay? Because it's not.
Right.
So, yeah.
This is just despicable. It's just another form of eugenics when you think about it. When you think about it, the vast majority of abortions being performed in this country today are on black babies. We're murdering millions and millions of black babies. And yet the black community doesn't see this as any kind of assault on them and their culture whatsoever. They're accepting of it. But if you go back in history and look at it, this is an assault on an entire culture of people that if it were in the history books, someday we're going to look back in the history books and look at that and go like, how did we ever live with that? How did we ever allow that? But today, it's all acceptable because of the godless left and the way they spin everything, but they truly are godless and will try to get away. I mean, you know, it's okay. As you said, you made a really great point there, Lynn. This is going on all across the country, and I guarantee it. That's the way these things absolutely work. If this guy was getting away with it for this long, it's going on all across the country. There's no government oversight into abortion clinics. There's absolutely none. I mean, there's minimal. But how could this guy do this for this long if there was actual oversight, healthcare oversight? Yet, the government wants to take away my guns. The government doesn't want me to have a semi-automatic rifle or a magazine clip with more bullets in it, and we're going to get to that with the terrorists. But they're so focused on me, who's never killed a person, and I doubt I ever will kill anybody unless I'm defending my family. And yet this guy in Philadelphia has murdered countless numbers of living, breathing babies in despicable ways. And yet, we don't care so much about that. So it's really not about being the compassionate party of compassion that cares about people and little children and babies. They don't give a flying you-know-what about children and babies and you and me. It's all about power. And so gun control is about controlling you and me. Allowing abortion clinics to run amok, that's just cleaning house. That's just getting rid of undesirables, you know, and on and on and on. And so that's why they truly are the godless left. Now, as we start to move into the whole terrorism thing, I want to bring something up that's getting a lot of attention among the hardcore Tea Partiers, conservatives, Ron Paul supporters. His son, Rand Paul, if you go to foreignpolicy.com, said something the other day about drones. He's on board with drones. And apparently he seems it seems that the Boston massacre type terrorism plot has changed his mind a little bit about that, because he was opposed to drones before killing Americans on American soil. But here's what Rand Paul had to say. If someone comes out of a liquor store with a weapon and $50 in cash, well, that could be somebody who's got a concealed carry license, right? And it's their cash. He didn't really specify. We know what he's talking about, though. A weapon in their hand because they just robbed it and stole $50. I don't care if a drone kills them or a policeman kills them. Now, I've got some strong thoughts on that. I'm gonna say this. I'm gonna turn it over to you, Lynn, and tell me what you think. As a Marine, as a conservative, maybe you don't have a problem with drones flying around and helping the police force, whatever. But this is my statement, and then I'll tell you why afterwards. Once again, we have a politician who never served in the military but seems to know about the military and military technology and can pass these judgments. Where are we headed? Are we going to become Judge Dredd, where drones are making life-and-death decisions and deciding who gets assassinated and who doesn't because they're carrying a weapon and maybe haven't shot anybody, done anything? But, you know, is this Judge Dredd now coming to life, where somebody flying a drone is going to make a judicial decision and kill somebody based on what they see from the drone? So I'll turn it over to you, Lynn. What are your thoughts?
Well, I'm against the whole drone program, period. You know, anywhere, for any reason. That would include immigration. Once you let them in, they find loopholes to put them other places. You know, they don't need much of an opening to make it legitimate that, you know, when we use them for the border, that we've got them flying over people's houses in Montana, checking people out. You know, I would be totally against that. You know, machines make mistakes. If you're not physically there to make the call on shooting someone to death, you cannot tell really what's going on at that point. I mean, it might be a video game to you. And that's the way our kids are being raised now. A lot of them. To think life's a video game. You know, they see these weapons, they see what happens on these video games. You know, 40 years ago, what came on TV on three channels when I was growing up, you have unlimited number of channels now that are putting all this crap out. Nobody can keep up with it. So, but the drones, I mean, yeah, people are going to say, if you ask the question specifically that, you know, would you be in favor of drones to control criminals at prison? People are going to say yes. But ask them the question, if would you be for that if at a later date the government could come in and use them for other purposes? They would say no. So when we see a poll, they're skewed to what they want to hear. They are not – these polls are not scientific. I mean, they just pick 1,500 people at random, or, you know, these are Democrats, these are Republicans, and, you know, room for error, blah, 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 blah. But they're not asking the full question. Take a step back from the question. Step out of the box. Ask the right question. Don't ask, you know, would you vote for Obama tomorrow? Well, yeah, I would. But give me another option. So, just like the drones, I'm totally opposed to the drones anywhere in the United States.
Yeah. I agree with you, and I give you my perspective. Yeah, once we open the door, look, we open the door to drones in the military overseas, and now that, where is it going? It's coming here. And they'll tell us, oh, it's just for immigration to begin with, and then pretty soon it'll be something else. See, they slowly, carefully get us used to them. And pretty soon you're going to be sitting on your patio on a nice day, and you're going to see a drone circling over your neighborhood doing surveillance. And, you know, some people would argue that, well, Tom, you know, as long as you're not breaking the law, then, got nothing to worry about. That's not necessarily true. That's not necessarily true. They could be gathering information that, the government can use against you at a later time. We know that the government has framed people in the past. And there's a certain expectation of privacy. When you live in a private community of homes and you're in your yard, you're going to start seeing people putting up canopies so that they can sit out in their yard and you can't see them from the air. But let me just this Rand Paul hypothetical situation. First of all, why is a drone over circling over a liquor store and happens to catch a guy that just come running out? Well, let's just say an alarm went off and the drone was in the area. Okay, well, what was the drone doing? If the drone was chasing some other bad guy, then so we're just going to have drones at the ready circling over the city, and then as soon as an alert comes in, boom, headed on over there. Okay, so what does the drone operator know? He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know anything. And from the air, you've seen some of the drone videotape. It depends on what altitude it's at, et cetera. It can be pretty good video. It can sometimes not be such great video. But let me tell you, as a military pilot, former military pilot, that we relied heavily on eyes on the ground to direct our firing, whether it was bombs, bullets, rockets, et cetera. We needed that. Otherwise, in an urban situation where there are civilians present, it's very dangerous to just start shooting at some guy from the air, whereas police on the ground have a much better ability to assess what's going on. So eyes on the ground are highly important. Now, if you had some terrorists, a cell of terrorists that were holed up in some house, and you got the SWAT team there and the police and et cetera, it might not be a bad idea to have a drone over there to assist them, and yet we have helicopters that do that. Now, I realize drones are cheaper, but the kinds of numbers of drones they're talking about aren't going to be just to assist in situations like that. There's going to be a whole lot more surveillance going on, and then what does happen? If, as Rand Paul suggested, the drones start shooting, there's going to be collateral damage. I guarantee it. There's going to be bullets flying all over the place. So you just can never have the same sort of judgment and ability to assess from the air as someone on the ground. You certainly can do more damage from the air, but this is not a war zone here in the U.S., and all we're going to do is turn our great country into another war zone, a police state, police action war zone. Look at how many police officers, SWAT officers, FBI agents geared up weapons like they were overseas in Iraq. I mean, they didn't look much different than our soldiers in many ways. And how they got into firefights with these Boston terrorists, hundreds of rounds flying, and one of them still gets away, and one of them is walking straight out. They ran out of ammo. Some of those agents ran out of ammo and had to wait until the older terrorist ran out of ammo and ran out and jumped them because they ran out of ammo. So We're trying to say that a drone is going to solve these situations. No, a drone's going to make things worse. And I would point out one other thing. In one of my favorite books is called Marines in the Garden of Eden Great book, though. Marines in the Garden of Eden. And it's a story of Anne Nasiriyah in Iraq. And, of course, that's where Private Lynch was captured. A lot of the mistakes that were made. But there were blue-on-blue engagements, but they weren't soldiers blue on blue. And if you don't know what blue on blue is, our forces shooting at our forces because it's hard to see, it's night, and different things. The blue on blue engagements were mortar rockets that were launched beyond line of sight, thinking that they were targeting bad guys, and there were our guys, and as well aircraft rolling in on our armored equipment and shooting up our own armored equipment. So the point is, when you're not line of sight, when you're up in the air, it's a lot easier to target your own people and hit the wrong people than it is for the folks on the ground. There weren't, from what I recall, any blue-on-blue engagements of soldiers on the actual ground. And why is that? Because they recognize certain things. They know the sound of their own rifles. When you're in an airplane, an F-18 or an A-10 rolling in on some targets, you're not hearing anything outside on the ground. But the guys on the ground are hearing mortar rockets. They can recognize the sound of their own mortar rockets. They can recognize the sound of the difference between an AK-47 and an AR-15 and some other rifles. So that's just what my military example to show you how drones trying to do what Rand Paul, who's never served and doesn't know anything about aviation and drones and aircraft and weaponry, seems to think that it's okay, but he doesn't know. And he should have talked to somebody before he opened his mouth and blabbed about this. So all you libertarians out there that think he's wrong in this, guess what? You're right. I agree with you. Now, this from Reuters. Let's get into the terrorist stuff. This from Reuters. The name of one of the Boston Marathon bombing suspects, Tamerlan Tsarnaev, was listed in the government's highly classified central database of people it views as potential terrorists. Now, you're going to hear this in the news today. Why am I covering it? Because there's a couple things that you may not pick up in the news. They may not put out, not even Fox, okay? And I can't say that I'm that enthused about Fox anymore these days. But so they were in a database, but the list is so vast that it did not mean authorities automatically kept tabs on them. So this was one of the problems after 9/11. The terrorism database was so convoluted and vast that it was hard to keep track of people that you wanted to keep track of, and it was hard for other agencies to look at it and make sense of it. Well, guess what? How many years has it been since 2001? 12 years, and it hasn't changed. So when these politicians, and I think this is right up your alley, Lynn, when these politicians pontificate about how, well, we need to do this and pass this law and pass that law, and we need to confiscate guns and not allow you to do this and not allow you to do that, how are they going to make things better when the laws that they passed following 9/11, they haven't enforced and they're not following? How do more laws make things better? Go ahead.
Well, and that's just a thing. That's not going to happen. It doesn't. It won't make anything better. You know, when you look at the terrorist acts that have happened, you know, here over the last, 8 months, 4 years, Fort Hood. We call that a workplace violence incident. They're not going to, by taking guns away from us, like you said, with shooting at one of the suspects. You know, when you shoot 2,000 rounds at a suspect and you hit him once, you hit him twice, what good is banning assault rifles going to do for us? It's not going to do any good. 99% of the shooting incidents or crimes in the country are created with handguns. You know, and you made a couple of good points, Tom, about the drones. With, what are they going to do? Are they going to sit on towers every block? Are they going to be waiting for something to happen? You know, how many times have we seen somebody that on camera has no gun at all? The next person has a gun and is pointing it at the person coming at him. Who are you going to say is the one that you should shoot with the drone? I mean, we haven't all seen crazy people with bats in their hands and knives in their hands going after somebody with a gun? The reason why these guys weren't caught is there's too many levels of bureaucracy. There's too many organizations. There's too much government. You know, if there was one agency that was handling that, they would have caught the guy. That's their specialty. That's what they do. You know, everybody kind of specializes in something else. So we don't need more layers to the onion. We need to get back to the middle of the onion and unpeel all the layers.
Yeah. So. Well, and so what we've got here is a massive failure of our government to protect us and an administration that has been telling us that Al-Qaeda is pretty much decimated and we're all good to go and safe. And look how safe we've been the last 5 years. Well, this stuff's been festering for 5 years, and now we find out that when this guy left to go back to Russia, it set off little alarms with the FBI. He was in the TIDE database. It set off some alarms, but he waited 6 months to come back. By the time he came back,
It said, we haven't heard from that guy, and they dropped it. So he was able to get back in. So that was a massive failure of this administration. I pin this squarely on the president's shoulders. No, he doesn't run the FBI, but he's in charge and can tell them what he wants done and how he wants things run. And the way he's run things is to be extremely lax and not ensure that we have, he can go to Congress and say, hey, listen, this database isn't working out. You know, we were supposed to put these databases together and work with other agencies. We need something new. But he hasn't done that. He hasn't listened to his people complain. I guarantee you there are agents within the agency who have complained about this stuff, but it never makes it to the top. It gets squelched because everything's okay. Let's just not rock the boat. That's precisely what's been going on. But to top it off, not only did he get back into the country after 6 months, where he would have been flagged and probably not allowed back in the country, that might have stopped this incident from happening. I don't think his younger brother would have gone it alone at that point. We don't know for sure, but it's pretty likely he wouldn't have. Now, second of all, what else would have thrown off a red flag? When he left the country, the ticket he had, the name on it did not match his ID. So it leads me to believe, they haven't talked much about this in the news, but I believe that what he did was he altered the spelling a little bit of his name when he purchased the ticket such that it wouldn't throw up any red flags. But the TSA, when they looked at his ID and his ticket, did not catch the fact that the spelling was incorrect. If they had caught it right then and there, they would have taken him aside and started doing the checks on what his real name is, and they would have found out, and that would have sent off the alert. Not only the alert, it did send off the alert, but it would have probably stopped him from leaving the country and probably done a little deeper investigation into him. You know, Lindsey Graham just said today that if you go on the Internet and Google this guy's name, you'll find him in YouTube videos trashing the United States, talking about jihad and how Christians are, infidels and on and on. So when the FBI did interview him, and he was a person of interest because Russia contacted our government numerous times to warn about him. So they could have just gone on YouTube and gotten their evidence to show, did you say this? It looks like you're saying it. Yeah, you said it. You're out of here. And deport the guy. But did they do that? No, they're not doing their job. And I know that I've watched these spooks on TV say, well, for every one guy think of the 10 people that I don't give a damn of what your excuses are. You failed. You failed. So this is a problem with our government, and it rests squarely on the shoulders of our president, because one of the most important jobs he has, read the Constitution, he doesn't have a whole lot of authority. One of them is national security, and he has failed miserably at national security, and I hope we don't see any more incidents like this. But we've allowed, and now let me just move into Michael Cutler here real quick, because I said earlier that Michael Cutler testified in March that one of the biggest problems with terrorism in the U.S. and coming terrorism is our immigration policies. And you can see that this was a miserable failure, not only between the FBI and their terrorist databases and the warnings coming from Russia, and it was easy to dig up information on this guy, but our immigration system that allow these guys in here when one brother's flagged as a potential terrorist and his immediate brother who he lives with is granted citizenship. I mean, what are we doing? So here's a little clip out of Cutler's testimony that he talks about immigration benefits. Now, he said it's found on page 98 of the 9/11 Commission report. So this is going back to the 9/11 Commission, and we've done nothing to stop this. It said terrorists in the 1990s, as well as September 11, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entry. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. That could take years. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school, receive funding. Now, see, this isn't from the 9/11 report. Cutler testified about this just last month. And what was the older terrorist in Boston, he and his wife were receiving welfare. And he's not a citizen. His younger son became a citizen. His younger brother became a citizen, but he wasn't even a citizen. He was getting welfare. So obtain and receive funding, go to school, learn English, make contacts, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. That's straight out of 9/11. And so we see a classic failure to follow up and fix these problems with our immigration policy, and now we're being asked to allow a pathway to citizenship for millions of more undocumented immigrants. And we're going to get to Marco Rubio in a second here, but I did a little research when, going back to 2003, various reports, census data and reports, government reports, independent groups, were talking about illegal immigrants in the U.S. in numbers anywhere from 11 million to 20 million. But predominantly most organizations were talking about the around the 11, 12 million range. When you watch a guy like Marco Rubio or any one of these schmucks in the gang of Ocho talking about, we're going to do thorough background checks, and, you know, what are we going to do about these 11 million people here? So are they telling us that since 2003, no illegal immigrants have been coming here? Because the Department of ICE, or the ICE officials, have been saying that they expect, they believe, as well as the union has put this out also, that there have to be at least 500,000 coming in every year. 500,000 every year. So when Rubio stands up there and talks about 11 million people, it's not possible. We had 11 million illegals by most estimates in 2003. And here it is, 10 years later, and he's still using the same old tired number. That should tell you something about him right there. He's got an agenda, and it's not for our benefit. What say you about that, Lynn?
Yeah, the immigration issue, what we want again is we want to provide amnesty for 11 million, really 25 million people, or 25 million illegals. And let's not just call them, green carders or, you know, they're illegal immigrants. They came here illegally. You know, if we break the law as United States citizens, we get punished for that. Come on. You come here, you don't have any rights if you're not an American citizen. You don't have any rights under our Constitution anyway. Kick them back. The more that we allow, the farther we get from sealing the border, and you can't tell me we can't do that. East Germany did that. The Wall of China was built. What, are you telling me they had that technology 1,000 years ago, but we don't have it now? Come on. You know, drop some cement down there and let's move on. But we don't want to seal it for a reason. It's greed. There's other organizations out there paying for that.
Well, let me tell you what Janet Napolitano said just yesterday at the Senate immigration hearing. She said that the Senate immigration bill would improve the system to avoid any chance of clerical errors by making passports electronically readable. Now, why do we need an comprehensive immigration bill to fix that problem? Why couldn't that have been fixed? In fact, there were all kinds of proposals and law passed to stop these errors from being made, and yet they weren't, and they haven't been. So why are we to believe that a new law that has all of these different enforcement mechanisms will actually be enforced? We're not enforcing existing law. So what we're really talking about is we're going to create a pathway to citizenship for citizens, for illegal immigrants, but none of the enforcement mechanisms are actually going to work, or if the President of the United States, like he currently is doing with current immigration law, decides not to enforce it, so we're going to get none of the benefits of this law and all of the downside. And let me tell you what one of the downsides is. I'm going to pull this up off of, I got to go into my Dropbox, but I've been putting this out as much as I can. I've been contacting congressional offices, senatorial offices, and they usually don't want to talk to me unless I'm in their district or I'm in their state. But it's important that people understand this. So let me read this little clip that I've written up and posted all over on a lot of social sites. We don't want to give these 11 million illegal immigrants citizenship American of Mexican heritage. Poor Mexicans are socialists. And if you're a Republican, they're never going to vote for you because they like big government. They like handouts. Contrary to popular belief that Hispanics are hard workers and family-oriented, yeah, sure they are. They're hard workers because they have to be because they're illegal right now. They're undocumented. But if we bring them out of the shadows, they're going to unionize because there are groups just waiting for them to gain legal status. They're not going to work for $2 an hour. They're going to get minimum wage or better, actually. They're going to get union wages, and there's going to be incentives in this Senate bill to hire them. If you hire a formerly illegal immigrant, you can get a $3,000 tax break for being such a nice guy. Well, what if I wanted to hire an American citizen? You're not going to get that tax break. You're only going to get it when you hire lawbreakers. That's what we're seeing in the Senate bill. But let me move on. And this is the thing that I have to make very, very clear to everybody. These illegal immigrants will never support our Constitution as written. They're socialists. They don't like the things in our Constitution unless they can add to it, like the second Bill of Rights that FDR proposed, which is really straight out of the old Soviet Constitution, which really takes your rights away. It gives you all kinds of rights, but it means the government has to provide those. See, they're not God-given rights. They're government-provided rights. And when government provides you with rights, they have to take your liberty and sovereignty to be able to do that. That's what these people believe in. How do I know this? Well, let's take a look at some of the numbers. How much of the Latino vote did Reagan get in his 1980 landslide victory? 35%. In his 1984 landslide victory, 37%. So it bumped up a couple percent. What happened in 86 when Reagan granted amnesty? Did it change his party standing among Hispanics? Absolutely not, because 2 years later, when George H.W. Bush ran for office, in his own landslide victory in 1988, he only got 30% of Latino votes. So 2 years after Reagan granted amnesty, George Bush got less of the Latino vote, the Hispanic vote. In 2011, the Pew Research Center reported in 2011 that of all groups surveyed, Hispanics have the most negative view of capitalism in America. 55% of all Hispanics had a negative view of capitalism, while the self-identified liberal Democrats, only 41% of them had a negative view of capitalism. So you can see, I'll go back to my other statement. They will never support our Constitution as written, and if they ever become citizens, we're in danger of scrapping or seriously damaging whatever's left of our Constitution. But how about in 2012, the Pew Hispanic Center found that 75% of Hispanics prefer a bigger government providing more services rather than a smaller government providing fewer services, compared with 41% of the general public. Now, let me say that again. 75% of people that self-identified as Hispanics, 75% said they prefer bigger government, when the general population, only 41%. This is why I'm saying, and it's shocking to some people at times, they should never have a pathway to citizenship, ever, 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 because these are the kind of people that were important. So who are the kind of people that most governments around the world let me continue on my little write-up here. The vast majority of illegal immigrants are poor and from Mexico. And in Mexico, the government relies on class warfare, like this administration, and freebies to the poor for their votes. Most illegal immigrants are already socialists. They like the freebies in Mexico, but guess what? Here in the U.S., they're better. So unless they end up with a business of their own and some wealth, they will always vote for redistribution. Now, Marco Rubio's family came from Cuba. Mexican and Cubans come from very different backgrounds. Communism is much worse than socialism. Communism really is the iron fist of tyranny. All you have to do is go visit Cuba. I've flown in there. I haven't had the chance to visit, but I know plenty of people that live around me that have gone back for a visit in recent years, and they're in tears when they tell me what it's like there now. So socialism, although we know that's the stepping stone to communism, it's not nearly as bad as communism. But socialism is bad, and it's not the way of life here in America. So Rubio doesn't get it. He comes from a country where people tend to be very patriotic, and if we can get as many Cubans voting for Republicans or voting conservative or standing up for the Constitution, great. But what he doesn't understand, that I do understand, is when you come from Mexico, you don't like our Constitution, you don't like capitalism, and you do like socialism. So what are the morons in our Republican Congress doing right now? Oh, they're dancing around this issue because they think they got to win over the Latino vote. I just proved they're never going to get it. What they need to do to call out the Democrats is to write a bill that would match the kind of immigration bill that most other Western and wealthy nations already have in place, and that is, you want to come to this country and have a path to citizenship, you must have a certain amount of wealth, you must have a higher education, and a professional standing. You've actually gone out and worked and proven yourself as a doctor, lawyer, professional in some way to get into our country, period. Well, the libtards would go nuts, Lynn. They would go nuts over that because they don't want professional people, people with wealth, people that want to keep their wealth and pass it on to their children. No, what they want are poor socialists that they can keep on the government dole like they've already got hundreds of millions of Americans doing right now, because it's a way of keeping the vote. That's how it works in socialist countries. You've got to have the poor people on the dole, dependent on government, and then government can stay in the kind of power it's in, and they're clearly the power, the party of government, big government, and government handouts, and that's how they intend to stay in power. So back to the original statement, there should be no path to citizenship, period, for illegal immigrants in our country now. Now, that's not to say that folks, if we actually came out and said, well, that's the law of the land, no path to citizenship, period, you're not going to ever get citizenship here. Well, they can go back to their host country, their home country, and apply through the normal means. I'm not opposed to that if we let them in. But when Rubio talks about these background checks, these rigorous background checks, how, Lynn, do you do a background check on someone that's undocumented?
You don't. They don't have a credit report. Yeah, right.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah.
I'm gonna let you wrap things up here for us because I've been doing a lot of talking, but there's some important stuff here. But I just want to direct people to the Shark Tank. It's a big website here in Florida. Conservatives here in Florida know all about it. Javier Manjarres is the owner and does a lot of writing there and does get contributors to it. He just came out with an article yesterday entitled "Rubio Shamefully Attacks Conservatives Over Immigration Reform." Now, this is a guy that was on the campaign trail working for Marco Rubio when Rubio ran for Senate and a big supporter of his and has been for the last several years. But that seems to have turned a corner because here below the picture of Marco Rubio on the Shark Tank, and here's how you get to it. There's different Shark Tanks. There's a Shark Tank TV show, I think, on the History Channel or Animal Channel. It's shark-tank.net. You find some always great articles there. Shark-tank.net. Right below the picture of Marco Rubio sitting in his office is the sentence, "A Shameful Senator Marco Rubio," by Javier Manjarres. And it starts off this way: myth, Senator Marco Rubio is loyal and trustworthy. Fact, he's not. And he goes on to explain to you with an insider's perspective of folks that worked for Rubio, that worked on his campaign, that worked for him currently, and his own insider perspective about what Marco's doing with this immigration bill. It's a must read. You've got to go read it. But Lynn, I'm going to let you finish out the segment here. You want to talk about Boston immigration or something that's important, and remind us again how people, first of all, where they can get to your website.
Well, you www.freedomfightersofamerica.blogspot.com or Twitter at Freedom FOA. That's at Freedom Fighters of America, Freedom FOA. I guess, you know, the main thing I would like to impart on everybody is this is the time for everyone to get involved. You cannot be idle any longer. Everybody's voice is important. You know, I was thinking a couple of years ago that just one person wouldn't be able to change it. Just one motion, one person needs to set it in motion. Everybody else will follow. And our political leaders are not leading us anymore. They're career politicians. Whatever they do is for their benefit to get reelected. It has nothing to do with their constituents, nothing.
they will all, you know, the scales of justice. The scales of justice, they run from one side to another. Whenever the heat gets hot on one side, they run back to the other side, and they pull you back in. Everybody's yo-yoing around here. Nobody's paying attention, but we are now. And the rest of these people need to wake up. You know, www.freedomfightersofamerica.blogspot.com. Invite your friends, homepage us. You know, we're trying to get the truth out to everyone. I've been doing some videos also, so I appreciate you letting me on, Tom, today.
Sure.
To get my input.
Well, we sure appreciate having you on, Lynn, and people need to get out there and check out your website. I absolutely agree. There's some good information there. I like finding websites that I can go get some straightforward, straight shooting information. And so, Freedom Fighters of America, we salute you here at the American Hour. And, Lynn, thank you for all the work you're doing. I know you're probably not making any money off of this because it's not about money. It's about saving our country, and that's what a true patriot is. I think I failed to mention that your oldest son is in the United States Air Force and serving his country as we speak. Is that correct?
Yes. Matter of fact, he just reenlisted also for another 6 years. So, matter of fact, he's stationed right now at Andrews Air Force Base and has met a lot of people out of Washington. So he's a security force. So, yeah.
Okay.
But,
good. Good
but,
for him. Well, listen,
yeah.
Lynn, thanks for your service. Thanks for what you're doing now. You're continuing that service. Thanks for your son's service and your family's support for you doing this. And we urge everybody to go out to freedomfightersofamerica.blogspot.com. And check out the news and the videos and get involved in some way, either there or just simply passing the information on to your friends to, hey, come and read this website so that you can be informed and know what's really going on out there. Lynn, thanks for being with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
All right.
Thanks, everyone.
Day. All right. So just a couple things I wanted to bring up here. If you go – and I know Wikipedia isn't the best of things to use, but it's pretty straightforward in this case. Terrorism in the United States. Look, in the 2000s, there was a firebombing of a Jewish synagogue in Syracuse in 2000. I don't think those were right-wingers. And I want to bring up a point. I saw people the day after the bombing attack in Boston immediately, not just the mainstream media, I saw it on Facebook, other places. Oh, well, it's probably some right-wingers. Well, Glenn Beck made a really important observation. He said, right-wingers attack the government. They don't attack people. It's left-wing loons and nut jobs and Islamists. They attack people and try and kill as many people as possible. They don't attack federal buildings. They attack people in crowded places. That's how they operate. And so I want to make that point, but to suggest that it's right-wingers that are typically the terrorists in our own country, I go through the list, and I'm going to read you some of the people here that clearly are not right-wingers. In 2000, New York terror attack, three young Arab men hurled crude Molotov cocktails at a synagogue in the Bronx. Let's see. May 21st, 2001, the Center for Urban Horticulture in the University of Washington was burned by the Earth Liberation Front. Now, that's not a right-wing group. Of course, September 11, Al-Qaeda in 2001. What else? 2001, 2002 here. They're including things that are people that were politically motivated but not necessarily what I would call a terrorist attack. So there are a few people here that I'll tell you one. The mailbox pipe bomber, Lucas John Helder. I don't know whether he's a right-winger or a left-winger or what he is, but he injured six people, and he was denouncing government control over daily lives and the illegality of marijuana, as well as promote astral projection. He doesn't sound like a right-winger to me. He just sounds like a total nut job, and there aren't too many right-wingers out there, Tea Partiers, that are promoting marijuana use. Let's see, in 2002 at
the Los Angeles airport shooting. It was a 41-year-old Egyptian national. You guys getting the picture? 2002, the Beltway sniper attacks. It was John Allen Muhammad and Lee Boyd Malvo. Killed six people. They were not right-wingers. Let's see. Some of these, they don't know who did this stuff. Mohammed Reza Terry Azar injured six people when he drove an SUV into a group of pedestrians at UNC Chapel Hill. To avenge the death, this is his words, to avenge the death or murders of Muslims around the world. The deaths of Muslims? So if I wanted to avenge the death of my grandmother who died peacefully in a hospital bed, is that what he's talking about? Deaths? Just random deaths? People just died of old age? We've got to avenge them. What a nut job. The Seattle Jewish Federation shooting was carried out by Naveed Afaz Haq. If I said that right, a Pakistani descendant. Let's see. there's other ones here that they don't know who did. Oh, the Earth Liberation Front burned another home down. Let's see. We got a homemade bomb at the recruiting office, military recruiting office in Times Square. That's not a right-winger because right-wingers, they love the military. It's the lefties that hate the military. Let's see. What else we got here? Well, you get the picture. So I'm just trying to let people know. And then Wikipedia starts from 2010 to the present. Pentagon shooting. Let's see. They don't say much about who that person was. But we got a Sikh temple shooting. And, of course, we've got the Boston Marathon bombing. We know who they were. So these charges that it's right-wingers that commit these kind of acts because they're frustrated. Well, I think these Muslims were pretty darn frustrated. They sure acted like it, sure talked it up. So I'm not sure why liberal, Democrat, white Americans are so quick to jump on the side of Islam and try and protect it and shield it. Oh, wait, I do have a theory. And here's my theory, which I know for a fact. There's only one religion on earth that hates the West, that hates America, that hates Western civilization, and it's Islam. So you're not going to see libtards in droves becoming Muslims, but they certainly can do everything they can to protect an ally in the war on Christianity, on the war on personal liberty and sovereignty, and in the war on our Constitution, because that's just the kind of godless, lawless people they are. So there you have it. Now, I want to, because I am an airline pilot and I see this stuff going on, I just wanted to bring up a couple points. We talked earlier about the sequester and the FAA flight delays. Well, if you go to the New American, the newamerican.com website, and take a look yesterday at flight delays increasing as FAA announces sequester furloughs, let's just see what's really going on over there. Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma called the FAA furloughs a dangerous stunt. Now, you can call things a stunt, and, oh, you really don't have to do it. And we talked about it earlier. How is it, my question today was, how is it that we have more money than last year in the federal government, but we have to shut things down? We just didn't get the increases we wanted. We did get an increase. We actually have more money than last year. Well, I'm going to explain to you how this all works and how this administration is making you feel the pain to somehow inflict pain on the Republican Party. But the point is, the administration really doesn't care about you. FAA Administrator Michael Hurtis said that furloughs were necessary to offset the $637 million in cuts demanded by the sequester out of its $16 billion budget, that his people could find no other way but to furlough all 47,000 of the agency's employees, now not at once, but they, you know, rolling a couple here today, a couple there tomorrow, including its 15,000 air traffic controllers. Because of the furlough initially requiring each employee to take one day every 2 weeks, just one day every 2 weeks, planes will have to take off and land with less frequency. Well, guess what? The editors at Investor's Business Daily did a little looking into this. And back in February, they called this furlough coming phony. They said it's misleading. Investor's Business Daily noted that back in 2000, the FAA handled 23% more air traffic than today with fewer controllers than it currently employs. So either air traffic controllers have gotten far less efficient in the last 13 years, or the FAA could get by with about 3,400 fewer of them without affecting the quality of air travel one bit. Now, some additional proof. NAV Canada in Canada runs their air traffic control, and it's a privatized company. It's not the government. Boy, we know how government does such a much better job than private companies, right? But in Canada, they're actually smart up there. They've privatized certain things that the government used to do, and it works so much better now. So NAV Canada operates with one quarter fewer employees than did the government when it controlled air traffic. Before it privatized that responsibility back in 1996, while air traffic has increased by half. So they have one quarter less, and traffic has increased by half, and they're handling it no problem. So this is part of the plan, according to Shika Dalmia, writing for Reason.com. In early March, President Obama flew around the country outlining all the horrible things that were going to happen, trying to think that he would scare the Republicans into coming up with, giving him the money he wanted. And as I said earlier, it's right here in this article, the $44 billion in sequester cuts for the balance of this year, not 85 that the libtards keep saying. Every talking head on TV says 85. It's not 85 for this year. We go year by year, budget by budget, 85. Well, make it a trillion. It's a trillion-dollar budget cut, which would be great, actually. But make it a trillion over, flow this out over the next 20 years. Or actually, you'd have to probably flow it out over like 50 years. But use the word trillion repeatedly, that we're making a trillion-dollar cut this year, when in fact it's not true. So the $85 billion is an outright lie. And once again, we've got another article here discussing it and proving my point. So that's what's really going on. The FAA could manage this. Well, let's look at just a little bit more here. According to Logan Albright at FreedomWorks, even the $637 million in cuts that is forcing the FAA to delay air travelers is fraudulent. The FAA only requested a budget of $15.172 billion for fiscal year 2013. After the $600 million reduction, guess how much money it receives. After its $637 million reduction, it asked for $15.172 billion. Guess how much it has to work with? $15.999 billion. More than it asked for. So it got more than it asked for, but if you cut out the $600 million, it still has more than it asked for. And yet they've got to, furlough people and scale back. So it's a massive scam. Massive scams. Go look at this article at thenewamerican.com. It outlines exactly why this is a total scam, and you and I, the American people, are being screwed once again by our government. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today. We're going to continue this line of discussion here about how we're getting screwed by our federal government, and how we're getting screwed by the gang of Ocho, and how we're getting screwed by Republicans like Rand Paul when it comes to drones, and on and on. It just doesn't end. We've got to get rid of these rhinos and get people that actually believe in the Constitution and personal sovereignty and liberty and privacy rights, and get them to Washington. So thanks for listening to the show today, or downloading it if you listen to it after the fact. We'll be back tomorrow, Thursday morning, 11 a.m., same time, on the 25th of April. And hopefully we'll see you there again. Thanks for joining us today.
You're listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.